and Sam Rejofsky, Sam Nation, live on Talk Radio 790 KBC. It's Thursday night. We are here in the Sweet James Studios, ready for battle. Phone number, if you'd like to reach us, reach me here on the program, 800-222-5222. Sam@samnation.com is the email. Before I get into this very important topic here related to the Gold Star families, a phone call that the president made, the allegedly heartless and insensitive phone call that President Trump made to the family, to the widow of a fallen soldier. I do want to tell you, I'm also going to next hour. I will get to what Bush said today about Trump. I'm already seeing backpedaling. I see the Bush camp, the establishment camp, backpedaling and softpedaling the president's, the former president's speech. It was definitely a slam at Trump. I'm going to get through it, explain it to you, what you need to know, and I'm going to do that at the start of the 8 o'clock hour. So at any rate, Federica Wilson, bet you didn't even know who she was before this whole thing exploded. This is a congresswoman from Florida who wears sequence cowboy hats. She looks like a rodeo clown. I'm just going to tell you that right now. She's a character. And she came out swinging yesterday, saying that Trump, she had overheard, she had listened in, was with the wife of a fallen hero, was with her at the time when the president made a phone call to her, and that Trump was insensitive, that he was rude, that he didn't remember her name. And this on Morning Joe with Joe Scarborough here on MSNBC. Here's Congresswoman Federica Wilson explaining what went down in the phone call and her feelings about that.
He was almost like joking. He said, well, I guess you knew something to the fact that he knew what he was getting into when he signed up. But I guess it hurts anyway. You know, just matter of factly, that this is what happens. Anyone who is signing up for military duty is signing up to die. And that's the way we interpreted it. And it was horrible. It was insensitive. It was absolutely crazy and unnecessary. I was livid.
She was livid, or livid, depending on what part of Florida you're from. So basically, her point is that Trump told the widow, hey, you know what? I'm so sorry. Sucks to be you. We're grateful for your husband's sacrifice. But you know what? He knew what he was signing up for. When it happens, it hurts anyway. And too bad, so sad. And I understand that there are people out there who want to believe that Trump is such a horrible person that he'd actually be capable of adopting that type of tone. And I knew, like, when this thing was happening, I thought, you know, let's let the White House respond. We'll put it all together and we'll handle it today. And thankfully, today proved to be eventful. Because the White House did respond, first with Sarah Huckabee Sanders, who said this.
I think it is appalling what the Congresswoman has done and the way that she's politicized this issue and the way that she is trying to make this about something that it isn't. This was a president who loves our country very much, who has the greatest level of respect for men and women in the uniform and wanted to call and offer condolences to the family. And I think to try to create something from that the Congresswoman is doing is frankly appalling and disgusting.
So, appalling and disgusting. The salvo, shots were fired back. Meanwhile, what the media is doing with it, standard stuff, right? Standard stuff. You've got a Democratic congresswoman who is the least impartial. I mean, no more impartial, of course, than Trump or the Trump White House, right? She is a partisan. She is anti-Trump. She's an Obama sympathizer, a big supporter of President Obama. Lifelong Democrat. Of course she's politicizing this. Of course she's coloring it. Even if you assume for a minute that she's not outright lying. Isn't she hearing things that she wants to hear? Isn't she already approaching whatever interaction, whatever conversation she might overhear of the president speaking to someone and already sending it through her prejudice of the president? Of course she is. But the media didn't address that at all. They ran with it all day. They ran with it. Vox reported that stories are swirling about insensitive remarks Trump made in a phone call with a grieving widow. Then the president fired back. Trump accused a member of Congress of lying about what he said in a phone call. And that became outrageous, too. How dare Trump accuse this poor female black congresswoman of lying? Well, all of this got nuked. All of this just got put to bed with probably one of the most incredible press conferences, press briefings that I have seen in a while. And this is General Kelly, who is the president's White House chief of staff, as you know. And he got up to address this controversy. Now, I'll tell you why he is the one getting up and speaking. And it's simple. Well, for one, General Kelly wore a uniform for most of his career. He has made these type of phone calls, but he's also received a phone call of this type. And that's when his own son died in the line of duty. And so it was a very somber General Kelly that got up today and just threw. I mean, you got to be the judge. This is powerful stuff. Listen to what he says about Congresswoman Wilson.
When he died, he was surrounded by the best men on this earth, his friends. That's what the president tried to say to four families the other day. I was stunned when I came to work yesterday morning and brokenhearted at what I saw a member of Congress doing. A member of Congress who listened in on a phone call from the President of the United States to a young wife, and in his way tried to express that he's a brave man, a fallen hero. He knew what he was getting himself into because he enlisted. There's no reason to enlist. He enlisted, and he was where he wanted to be, exactly where he wanted to be, with exactly the people he wanted to be with when his life was taken. That was the message. That was the message that was transmitted. It stuns me that a member of Congress would have listened in on that conversation. Absolutely stuns me. And I thought at least that was sacred.
Now, I got to tell you, watching this press conference live earlier, all the oxygen in the room just. I mean, normally the press, they're ravenous. You know, they're very keen to interrupt people speaking. And they do that many times, even when the president is speaking. You heard some noises of cameras going off, that type of thing. But really, it was quiet by the normal standards of what happens in that briefing room. People were in awe. The conference, I think, lasted his remarks maybe about 15 minutes, 10 to 15 minutes. And part of what preceded this, and this is really important, part of what preceded him saying that about the congresswoman's actions and defending President Trump and what he had said. Part of what General Kelly was getting at is his insight. He gave insight into what preceded all of this, which was Trump sat down with him and asked him his advice. Should I call the families of fallen soldiers? And this has been the controversy of the week, right? Because, you know, the president's remarks in the Rose Garden, get to those later. But you remember that. So that is what John Kelly started out with. General Kelly started out with in the press conference. He said, look, president came to me. He said, what do I do? And you'll be surprised to know what Kelly's reaction was, what his first bit of advice was. And that was, don't do it. Kelly actually said to President Trump, don't do it. He says, my recommendation is don't make the call. You are probably the last person that the family wants to hear from. But if you do, I suggest that you do X. And he proceeds to describe the phone call that he got when his son perished in the line of duty. And in that call, the elements echo almost exactly what is being alleged that Trump said here, which is, hey, your son was surrounded by the greatest guys on the planet. That he was doing what he loved. He was doing what he signed up for. He was there living the life that he chose. And, you know, he died a hero. And that was the substance of the phone call that Kelly had received and presumably many others before him. It's all subjective. This is what I'm getting at. This is what this controversy boils down to. It's entirely subjective. Like so many of the criticisms of Trump or other people, I always like to judge on substance. I try to divorce style over the substantive part of somebody's agenda or of a particular ideology. And here, I'm just repeatedly amazed by how many people are just they're so keen. They have accepted the caricature of who Trump is in their minds, in the media's mind, that it colors everything. It colors every interpretation of every interaction, of every message. And this is why, you know, this is why when I spoke to you the other day about what had happened with the New York Times and the biases, remember, and if you missed it, we've got the podcast up, so you can go back and listen to it. But, you know, biases matter. The bias of this congresswoman matters. And as I read the news yesterday about what she was saying, and it's tough when I'm not on air, and I would night off and the Kings were playing, so we weren't here. But, you know, I'm listening, I'm reading these articles, I'm watching CNN, and nobody is coming out and qualifying her interpretation of an interaction, which is all it was. She's there interpreting what the president is saying. And nobody's qualifying it with her own obvious biases, namely that she's a Democrat, that she hates Trump, that she's an Obama stooge, and that she wears crazy sequins hats and probably is, you know, bat crap crazy. Nobody stopped to say anything about that. And part of it is, well, that's it. I mean, it's part of it's, of course, you cannot criticize a experienced member of Congress, an African-American woman, a devoted civil servant. And that was the tenor of any defenses that came up. So I look at this controversy. Oh no, it's continuing. But I think now that Kelly's comments are out, I think this thing is going to die down. But it's fascinating to me too the way the conservative establishment is reacting to it. I saw a tweet out by a conservative commentator who said something. Well, this is his reaction, his immediate reaction to watching the press conference with Kelly was, wow, my heart breaks for Kelly that he has to do this. Shame on Trump and shame on the media for putting him in this position. And I think that's interesting, too, because Kelly got up. And you heard it in his voice, by the way. He got up and he said, what did it sound like to you? He was correcting the record because he knew what that call was. He was a percipient witness of the same phone call and had a completely 180 degree different reaction to it. And also, of course, knew what the president's intentions were. So he gets up there. He's forced to get up there, forced to recount his son's death, forced to get personal, forced to get emotional. But it wasn't Trump's fault that he had to do that. It was a stupid congresswoman who got up there. But these Republicans, these conservatives, many of them, even they loathe Trump. They hate him so badly. that they're totally willing to look past the idiocy of the Democrats, of the left, and they are so blind that they're even blaming Trump for all of this. Why? What's that? Oh, it's because of his comments in the Rose Garden the other day. Is that what you're... Okay, well, I'm going to get to that when we come back, because you'll remember, Trump got up there and said, you know, Barack Obama didn't make calls to the fallen soldiers, the families of fallen soldiers. And the press said, it's a lie. PolitiFact came out and fact checked it. What do you think happened? What do you think he was right? Did you like what he said? Okay, well, don't go anywhere. I'm gonna address this right when we come back. Sam Rzhovsky, Sam Nation, live on Talk Radio 790 KBC.
Talk Radio 790 KABC.
Sam Rzhovsky, we are back here on Sam Nation, live on Talk Radio 790 KABC. Yeah, so the controversy that we're talking about here, the phone call that Trump made to Maisha Johnson, the widow of a fallen soldier who perished in a yet unexplained special ops mission, it appears, in the Niger, in Africa. This phone call purportedly being very insensitively delivered. Trump didn't remember the soldier's name. He said that basically, hey, your husband knew what he signed up for and, you know, tough luck. And this is the way it has been described by Frederica Wilson, the congresswoman / rodeo clown from South Florida. Well, we had the retort, and I played a clip of General Kelly coming out swinging. I mean, basically said how disgusted he was that he had totally perceived the call completely differently, that the president had done everything right, that had come from his heart. These phone calls are tremendously difficult. Detailed his own experiences from having lost his son in combat and received condolence letters and phone calls from various people. And also, interestingly, I thought detailed the run-up to what led President Trump to make these calls. Trump actually went to Kelly for advice. He went to General Kelly, his chief of staff, for advice. Do I do this? And Kelly told him, you know, frankly, no, I don't think you ought to, because probably the last person's families want to hear from. But Trump, I have to explain Trump to you a little bit here. No, I'm not an apologist, but somebody needs to explain to you, this guy never wore a uniform. He went to a military school for high school, so he wore a uniform there. Not a soldier. But this guy, I promise you, for all of Trump's faults, he freaking loves his country. He loves his country, and he is in awe of the military and the men and women that serve. I can vouch for that. So don't even me type of thing. Frederica Wilson is so off base on this. And her perception of this event, if she's not an outright liar, which I wouldn't doubt, but if she's not an outright liar, she's at least an extremely biased percipient. She's biased, and none of her biases has, of course, been discussed. So what led up to this controversy, of course, is when in a sort of offhanded remark, Trump at a Rose conference Rose Garden press conference, this is with Mitch McConnell the other day, said that basically, you know, hey, look, and other presidents, you know, didn't make phone calls. He was talking about how he made phone calls to the families and then basically said, well, you know, some past presidents, some of them have, many of them haven't made phone calls. And the world blew up. And in fact, in my view, Frederica Wilson came out. This is all part of a Democratic deal to. Yeah. This was all. It's a setup. I mean, they saw that happening and they had to bring him down with something. But, more on that maybe a little bit later. But here is General Kelly actually addressing this issue, because this is important. All the media came out saying how false Trump's claim was. And I was sharing an article from Vox that And here's the direct quote. Trump's claim about Barack Obama turned out to be a lie. Obama did, in fact, console grieving relatives of dead soldiers. But it was never about consoling. See what the media does? It was never about consoling. It was about making a phone call. Here's what General Kelly said about presidents calling and not calling.
Some presidents have elected to call. All presidents, I believe, have elected to send letters. He asked me about previous presidents, and I said, I can tell you that President Obama, who was my commander-in-chief when I was on active duty, did not call my family. That was not a criticism. That was just to simply say, I don't believe President Obama called. That's not a negative thing. I don't believe President Bush called in all cases. So when I gave that explanation to our president 3 days ago, he elected to make phone calls in the case of the four young men who we lost in Niger at the earlier part of this month.
See? There it is. Once again, Trump is proved right. And I would add, you know, I'll get a little more into this when we come back, but you know Kelly is, even according to the media, I mean, he's considered to be impeccably honest. I got to leave that there. That's very important. Okay, we got John Wolfe up next with the news. Don't go anywhere. We'll be back right after this.
Talk radio. 790 KABC.
All right, friends, welcome back. Sam Rejofsky, Sam Nation, live on Talk Radio 790 KABC. And right before the news break, I was explaining that in this controversy, in a he said, she said scenario between Trump and this congresswoman, Federica Wilson, who accused Trump of making a heartless and insensitive phone call to the widow of a fallen soldier, you could see how the media might give a leeway to the Democratic congresswoman. Makes perfect sense to me. I mean, it's accepted fact that Trump is a lying scoundrel, that he says outrageous things. You know, remember when he claimed, Trump claimed, I mean, unbelievably claimed, that Iran had been paid off hundreds of millions, billions, was it? I mean, what was the amount? Hundreds of millions of dollars that was flown in, pallets of cash on a jet. Do you remember when he claimed this? What a buffoon. Turned out he was right, of course, but, you know, that's months later. And by that point, you know, they were on to calling him a liar about something else. So Trump's a liar. So, of course, Federica Wilson, the congressional rodeo clown, is absolutely correct. I'm calling her that because she wears these crazy hats. You've got to see her. I posted a picture earlier on Twitter. And she's got the sequence cowboy hats, and she wears them everywhere. It's her signature look. You know what I think? I honestly think it's cultural appropriation. You know, I had that outraged rodeo clown reach out to me and say, this is an offense to rodeo clowns. You can't be calling her a rodeo clown, because there's some good working, hardworking, good rodeo clowns out there who would be very offended about this. You know, is she a cowboy? Is she a cowgirl? She grow up a farmer? You see how the left's ideology could end up being twisted, right? Against them. But anyway, I digress. So between her and Trump, of course, Trump's the scoundrel and she's the good guy, right? But I think now that that Kelly has come out, General Kelly, Trump's chief of staff, has come out and thrown not just cold water, but really outrage at this congresswoman and really put left no, there's no daylight, really. There's his remarks that we played here a couple segments ago. I mean, they are just so specific. There's no qualifications. He just called it outrageous, disturbing. At one point, Kelly said, I just needed to go. He walked around Arlington. He was so upset. He walked among the tombs of fallen soldiers just to be with, just to center himself. He was so upset. And this is, by the way, this is where the press's strategy has backfired, because the press for so long has been making Kelly out as the adult in the room, the guy that is the impeccable, the morally incorruptible General Kelly, the guy who is standing up to Trump. And what have we been led to believe? That beneath the surface, Kelly is seething about Trump. That he is so angry at Trump, that he is so mad, that he is getting ready to quit. Rumor swirling of his impending firing, or possibly even a pre-filed resignation. So all this stuff is in the background. This is what the press has been peddling. So how do you go back on that? Now they're in this funny spot, and it's you ought to enjoy this. Enjoy it, because how do you make it? You just beep beep beep. Just got to back up and start over. So I try to get you ahead of news cycle. So my prediction, come tomorrow, you'll have less flattering news stories from the left-wing media about Kelly. They're going to come up with something. They're going to come up with something, because now it no longer fits in their narrative. And what do these people do? They always come up with the narrative first and then find their facts after. Narrative first, above any facts. So it'll be interesting to see how that whole thing plays out. All right, don't go anywhere. Sam Rzhovsky, Sam Nation Live on Talk Radio 790 KABC.
Talk Radio 790 KABC.
Sam Rzhovsky here, loud and clear, from my friend, my attorney, sweet James Bergner. This is the lawyer that you need to call if you get into an accident, if you're injured, dog bites you, you maybe, I don't know, maybe you're vaping and your e-cigarette blows up. I don't know. Whatever it is, whatever product harms you, whatever injury you've had, give attorney sweet James a phone call. He's not your typical lawyer. He's not a grumpy guy. He's not one of those, you know, lofty, high-minded types that speaks over you and at you. No, he will listen. He will listen to you, and he will help you get through whatever problem you're facing. Don't try to do it alone. Don't call the insurance company or the company or anybody. Don't call anyone trying to do it, you know, and negotiate with them directly. Just call attorney sweet James Bergner, and he will help you. No recovery, no fee. You don't pay anything until he gets you the settlement that you deserve. 1-800-881-2021. 1-800-881-2021. Or visit sweetjames.com. All right, Sam Rzhovsky, Sam Nation, back live on Talk Radio 790 KABC. And what this all recalls, all this controversy regarding how big of a a-hole Trump is, right? That's really what the story's about. The press actually believed this congresswoman. I just put all this aside. They want to believe it so badly that Trump is such a horrible guy, that they got up there and they ate it up. They ate up a story that was total fiction about Trump calling this widow and being dismissive and brusque and just and unfeeling. Because that's the narrative that they want to push. And what this recalled, it recalled an interview that I had seen and that had touched me. And I kind of filed this away here thinking there would be an appropriate time to get back to it. And so I will do that now. In the aftermath of the shooting, the terrible shooting in Las Vegas, you'll recall that Trump went out to Las Vegas to meet with victims and go to the hospitals and he did that. And this was a teenage girl. We only have her first name. It's Tiffany. She gets asked by a reporter about her conversation with him. Now, she was injured in the fire, in the shooting. She's in the hospital. She meets with Trump. And a reporter asked her, you know, what was your conversation like with him? Her answer, you got to listen to this. So fascinating. Because, and ask yourself in the background, as you're listening to this, is this how you picture Trump being?
What was your conversation like with him? Do you remember what he asked?
Yeah, he was asking, like, who played and what we... Like, he knew that a lot of people knew it sounded like fireworks, which a lot of people did. And so he was asking what I did and where I went.
Did he offer you words of comfort? Did he say anything that stands out to you?
You said he was amazing. Where was that?
Yeah, he was, like, super nice. He wasn't who we see on social media. He was much more comforting.
What did he say that was so comforting?
I don't know, like his tone and voice and just the way he was.
What did he say that was so comforting? The media just, they can't even believe it. You might as well should see it. They're slack-jawed. I mean, you'd think that if, right, I mean, they've just, they're literally are picking their jaws up off the floor because this does not fit the narrative. So the reporter says, what did he say that was so comforting? And Tiffany answers, I don't know. Just like his tone of voice and just the way he was. So, interesting. Is that what you would expect a visit from President Trump to be like in the hospital? Because he did this visit with her without cameras rolling. You know, this is a little bit of an insight into Trump one-on-one talking to a regular person. And what we are led to believe is that in circumstances like this, he is a sexist, elitist, white privileged dude that wouldn't have any way, possible way of connecting with a regular human being. And yet I actually think it's all wrong. And I think what this does, and I'll talk a little bit more about this here when we come back, but I think what this does is reinforce again what I keep saying. As long as the opposition continues to underestimate him, they will never win. They will never, at least, they will never beat Trump. I mean, they may beat other Republicans. They may beat other Democrats and other politicians. But keep underestimating Trump. You're never going to beat him. Sam Rogowski, Sam Nation, live on Talk Radio, 790 KBC.
Talk Radio. 790 KABC.
Sam Rogowski, Sam Nation, live on Talk Radio, 790 KABC. Now, I am going to get... No, it's not dry. Don't accuse me of leaving the boring stuff for this. It's not at all. And it kind of got lost today in the shuffle with Kelly's press conference. Sort of sucked all the air out of the news cycle, too. Not just out of the room. What I'm talking about, what I'm referring to, is what I think and I would characterize as a bit of an earthquake. But this earthquake has been in the making for years now. George W. Bush got up in New York and gave a little speech. Oh, I listened to it. I did not watch it. I listened to it. Man, was he terrible at giving speeches. I mean, I'm not going to worry about it. I care about the substance. I'm more appalled at the substance of the speech. I'll tell you that. But he came out swinging at Trump. And it's interesting. It's interesting because, of course, wasn't this the same Bush that for 8 years, while Obama destructed so much of this country, he just sat back and said, not my place to criticize. So people are asking, why now? And there have been some interesting theories, and they're all, I think, a little bit wrong. They're a little bit off. So I will address that here when we come back. You heard that clip of Tiffany speaking. This is a gal who was injured in the shooting in Las Vegas, had been visited while at the hospital, recovering from her injuries, been visited by President Trump. During that brief stop that he made in Las Vegas, in the aftermath of those events, and interesting thing is she says he was comforting, he was compassionate, and the reporters ask, well, why? What? How so? Like, what made him compassionate? And her response is, yeah, you know, it was just this tone of voice, and that's right. Even Tiffany. This gal, even she was surprised. She seemed surprised. And she says, He's not who we see on social media. He was much more comforting. Well, the takeaway is that the caricature, a political caricature of any one person, is almost always wrong. People are far more complex. But you have a real difference. Let me give you an example of where the caricature doesn't work in the favor of the political operator. Hillary Clinton, her caricature, her facade is one of compassion. But yet her true heart, okay, when people get to know her, she's a lying sack of you know what. She doesn't give a crap about anybody. It's documented, right? People have worked for her closely. This is a documented fact. You get a guy like Trump, the caricature of him that he himself in ways puts out there through his tweets and his insults and that. The caricature of him is that he is a heartless you-know-what. But in reality, he's a compassionate guy. And it's this reason that lets him connect with people. This is why he's connecting. This is why he's persuading people. This is why he's getting people to get on the Trump train and ride it with him into the sunset. All the while, you have the entire political establishment scratching their heads and wondering, how is this possible? How can this buffoon be so successful? And the reason is so simple. Is because the average American, the regular people, you and I, who the political establishment loathes, are keener with our senses than they themselves are. And that's the truth. All right, establishment Bush up next. Don't go anywhere. John Wolfe up next with the news, and then I will have some more fun with you next hour.
Radio 790 KABC.
Hi, Sam Berjofsky, Sam Nation, live on Talk Radio 790 KABC. I'm sorry, that happened a little too quickly here because I'm finishing my cookie. These cookies, I got to tell you, Bill, these cookies are delicious. You know, these nights here, no, they get long, and I sometimes don't eat before I get to the studio, and the next thing you know, it's 8 o'clock. You know, I've done put an hour of radio into the can, and I'm sitting here, and I need a little pick-me-up. And Bill has these great cookies here that are, I think they're from Solvang. They come in these plastic buckets, and we're starting to go through them a little... Guys, I think a little too quickly. If you want me to know, want me to tell you the truth. Bill threatened to put them up around the office here, the studio. Empty buckets, you know, like trophies. Well, there's buckets of shame is what that would be. Reminders of just how many cookies we've consumed. Well, anyway, moving right along here. 1-800-222-5222 is the phone number. Sam@samnation.com is the email. And yes, with this Gold Star family controversy brewing, I think something very important has snuck by in this news cycle, and I want to get to it right now because it's important. There's a former president out there criticizing Trump, and you'll be surprised to learn it's not Obama. In fact, it's none other than President George W. Bush. Now, Bush, part of the reason why people are actually surprised, and they shouldn't be, but one of the reasons they're actually surprised is because Bush famously, back in 2008, when he was leaving the White House, Obama had been elected president, was succeeding him, Bush declared that he would not be criticizing his successor. That yes, it was because Clinton had certainly criticized Bush quite a bit, did a lot of speaking engagement. He had to. I mean, hell, you know, Clinton was passing the collection plate around and had to earn a living. So sure, an outspoken critic. And by the way, during Bush's tenure, everyone criticized him. God, the guy was like the a punching bag for everyone in the media, everyone on the political left. But he was the bigger man. I mean, he turned the other cheek and never defended himself and consequently watched his approval rating sink faster than the Titanic. I mean, it was brutal. I think by the end at the end of his second term, was it in the teens? I think he was at one point had an approval rating in the teens. But you wouldn't hear that from the press today, because the press is crowing with delight at this speech in New York given by W. And in the speech, I'll give you a soundbite or two here in a minute, because the speech, I mean, he lets Trump have it from both barrels. And in my opinion, what I heard was not an oblique, veiled reference to Trump in any way. I mean, he's talking about nationalism turning into nativism. He's talking about the forgotten dynamism, dynamic of immigration. He's talking about free markets being challenged, globalism not being a bugaboo. You know, actually, one part in the speech, he says something about, you can no more will away globalism than you could the Industrial Revolution 100 years ago, whatever. Very interesting stuff. Now, you've got to remember something. Bush is human. And the Bushes, they have got it in for the Trumpster. They hate Trump, and they hate Trump for two big reasons. One, the Trumpster torpedoed Jeb. Remember Jeb? Poor, hapless Jeb with his guacamole and his sad sack, Linus from Peanuts look. And he was never going to become president. He was destined to be a loser in that race from the get-go. But he was the presumptive head of the Republican Party. He was the guy that was supposed to win it. And millions of dollars of Bush family, friends, supporters, political contributors all sunk millions into Jeb. Remember that. You cannot discount the incredible suffering that was incurred when Jeb's pitiful race ended. No, people do not give. What was total money he burned through? $100 million or something like that in the primaries alone. It was an insane amount of cash. And I'm telling you right now that people do not lose $100 million. And there were individual donors that put in, $5-10 million a pop into his pack. People do not lose that kind of money and just walk away from it. And Jeb wasn't the one raising the money. In part, it was W. So W has got, every time he goes to a party with his, rich contributor friends that supported him through his meteoric rise from governor to president, every time he sits down with them and they have a party and a get-together at his house or at a she fancy restaurant or wherever, they are all talking about the same thing, and they're all the elephant in the room, if I can make a Republican joke, the elephant in the room is the millions of dollars that Jeb blew on that campaign. And they want something from it. And they're all going to Bush, I promise you. Maybe I have some firsthand knowledge. Okay, but I'm not gonna. I promise you that the conversation happening in that room is, you have to do more to oppose Trump, because these guys that are writing these checks, and I know some of them are big business guys. They're big business guys. They want open borders. Okay, they want what else do they want? They want free trade. They want NAFTA. They do not want NAFTA going anywhere. They are terrified right now. You saw today that We still haven't called China, labeled China currency manipulator, but Trump's going to go to China. And he is, even Tillerson right now, is rattling his chains. And going after China. So you see, with all of that going on, this is an enormous threat to big business. When we talk about the Chamber of Commerce, folks, this is a threat to them. And so they're going to a guy that helped solicit tens of millions of dollars for his brother's lame A-Money-Money campaign and are saying, bro, you got to help a guy out. I mean, we've been with you from the get-go. We did what you, we knew that your brother was a little bit of a loser. By the way, that also is true. They all had their reservations and doubts, but it was W and W's inner circle that reassured and went in and helped get the money together. So there's a favor owed, and this is, nobody's saying this today. Like, everybody's looking at this speech and going, how brave. Yeah, W's getting up there. And I saw some moron over at CNN today talking about how, oh, you know, these presidents, they actually become more reasonable when they leave office. They become, it's amazing how reasonable, how great Bush is. And it's mystifying because these were all people that were literally burning him. They were setting him on fire, practically. You think CNN spared Bush, for 1 minute? It's unbelievable. So listen here. I'm going to play a clip. I'm just going to illustrate what type of stuff was said in the speech. This is very important. Pay attention to every word because this is all – I'm going to say something else. This was carefully prepared. This isn't one of these freewheeling Trump-type deals where, you know, he's saying things that are throwaway thoughts. This is a teleprompted, prepared speech. And I know you haven't listened to Bush in a while, so I'm just going to remind you that it's slightly insufferable. Have a listen to this.
We've seen nationalism distorted into nativism. We've forgotten the dynamism that immigration has always brought to America. We see a fading confidence in the value of free markets and international trade, forgetting that conflict, instability, and poverty follow in the wake of protectionism. We've seen the return of isolationist sentiments, forgetting that American security is directly threatened by the chaos and despair of distant places, where threats such as terrorism, infectious disease, criminal gangs, and drug trafficking tend to emerge.
Well, nativism, right? This is the term du jour right now. It's a very pejorative term to describe anyone that dares to want its government to put our own people first. Okay? And that's so he's already this is clearly, by the way, can we agree? He's talking about Trump. And the forgotten dynamism, is that even the right? The forgotten dynamism that immigration has always brought to America. Does he mean the dynamic? I don't know. Dynamism. Well, but whatever it is, he means that immigration brings energy right into American culture. And we don't disagree with him at all. But you see, again, that's a sentence that's directly inspired by his open borders friends. They want an open border. They want guest worker programs. They don't want any curtails to immigration because that presents a problem with the labor force. All of a sudden, labor prices go up, right? This is we've talked about this on many occasions. And then embedded in here, by the way, is a tremendous lie that by trying to prevent illegal immigration, Trump is some kind of, you know, xenophobic bigot that disfavors immigrants of any kind. Which is absurd, and we know that's not true. It's an absolute mischaracterization of Trump's core philosophy. We've seen the return, Bush continues, of isolationist sentiments, forgetting that American security is directly threatened by the chaos and despair of distant places. Okay, so what's he talking about there? See, here is actually we start getting to the meat of the problem with Bush and why Bush got us into the mess that he did. And why today, right? Why today Trump is president? Trump is president today not because of Obama, in my view, as much as Trump is president now because of Bush. And let me explain this. The idea that American security is directly threatened by the chaos and despair of distant places is nonsense. It's especially nonsense coming from a guy, Bush, who created despair and created distant chaos by waging war and attempting to nation build in places that were absolutely not interested in our intervention. It was precisely over intervening in world affairs, overextending ourselves, disturbing the eco, the political and cultural ecosystems of our enemies. I don't dispute that. Because everybody knows now, looking back, that removing Saddam Hussein maybe wasn't the biggest genius move, because replacing him was in a political force far more brutal, far more deadly, and far more hostile to us. And he hasn't learned it yet. It's the same tired crap. This is vintage Bush. That's what this is. The neocons in the audience, you know, the Bill Kristols and everybody, they're all clapping and, oh, yes, oh, yes, oh, we missed this, oh, we missed this, it's so great. And this is not why I am a conservative. This isn't conservatism to me. This is big government interventionist, you know, globalist nonsense. Speaking for me, again, I can't always speak for Trump, but speaking for me and where I am coming from, I do think that I expect my government, when I pay my taxes every year, I expect that money to go to helping my country. And I'm not a fool. I understand that at times we have to engage abroad to protect our interests. But the Bush wars and the Obama wars, I'm lost on them. And it was a fair criticism during the campaign. And honestly, this rejection of nationalism and rejection of nativism, or however he's putting it, America isn't having any of this, because Americans are sick of engaging over trivial, I don't know, engaging and sending troops overseas for no, you know, particular, you know, final purpose. Infectious disease. Yeah, this is the compassionate conservatism what did that actually mean? What did it stand for? We had open borders, illegal immigration up the yin yang, wars that didn't work out, security that was continued to be threatened. And ironically, you know, Obama ended up being an extension of Bush, which is why Bush now wouldn't criticize Obama, but he's criticizing Trump. I wonder who's the real change agent here. It's Trump. Of course it is. All right, don't go anywhere. Sam Rogowski, Sam Nation, live on Talk Radio, 790 KABC.
Talk Radio. 790 KABC.
Sam Rogowski, Sam Nation, live on Talk Radio, 790 KABC. Parsing out the Bush speech, you know, he made a reference, and this is a speech that Bush gave earlier today, to a gathering of politico types, and this was in New York City. He really laid into Trump. I mean, he laid into Trump. He didn't mention the president by name. It was very classy of him. But he did attack virtually every position that Trump holds, and the left is just excited about this. I have a question. What do you think it must feel like for Bush to finally have the adoration of the media? It's a reasonable question. Because, okay, yeah, but you, so for 8 years, I'm not even talking about, I'm sure he had, you know, controversy before he was, when he was governor of Texas, but for 8 years, for his two terms in office, I mean, you want to talk about an abusive relationship? You want to talk about hashtag me too? I mean, the media had its way with him. They brutalized him. It was like watching, you know, the political equivalent of a snuff film every day. I mean, it was brutal. I have no other way of putting it. You were there, you remember? And if you weren't, take our word for it. Ask your parents. It was brutal. And so you got it. I'm just thinking about this on a human level. All of a sudden, you know, you're so abused that Bush leaves office and goes and crawls into his home in Dallas and literally does not come out for weeks. I mean, he goes into hiding. He's not like Obama, you know, wearing nice, cool skinny jeans and a leather jacket and being Joe Cool walking the streets of Manhattan. Bush literally takes a painting and starts painting dogs. I mean, he also painted his legs in a bathtub. I want to point that out. Be nice, Sam. You know what? Do I sound upset? Is that what you're saying? I sound a little upset. I mean, I voted for him twice. You know, I did. And, well, the alternatives. Yeah, the alternatives were pretty bleak. That's what politics, that's what voting in America is. You pick the best, worst option. That's right. But he went into hiding, and now coming back, it's got to feel so dang good to have CNN, Jim Acosta, you know, speaking of painting dogs, I mean, they're all just salivating over him. The reactions are crazy. You know how I know that he is courting the media? You know how I know that he has a little, how do I put this? A little pleasure. He's getting pleasure, direct pleasure from having this type of media attention. He's courting it even. He brings up this. Listen to this little throwaway line in the speech that everybody missed. I'm playing it for you right now.
Little did we know that the repressive governments would be undertaking a major effort to encourage division in Western societies and undermine the legitimacy of elections.
Whoa! Yes! There you go. Brave George W. Bush. As the entire narrative on Trump-Russia is falling apart, if you missed it, check Tuesday's show on the podcast. But as the whole narrative is falling apart on Trump-Russia, he is bringing this up. Little did we know that repressive governments, Russia, would be undertaking a major effort to encourage division in Western societies and undermine the legitimacy of elections. Okay. Every morning, the President of the United States receives a CIA brief. Every flippin' morning. You're telling me that for 365 days times 8, Bush never in one of those CIA briefs got a report of some country trying to influence or undermine our elections? Are you serious? That's a bold-faced lie. I will bet money on it. Okay, John Wolfe up next with the news. And John, he does not lie. So stay tuned. Sam Rojofsky, Sam Nation, live on Talk Radio 790 KABC.
Talk Radio 790 KABC.
All right, Sam Rojofsky, Sam Nation, live on Talk Radio 790 KABC. The Washington Post is reporting, this is a great story here. I'll read you the title of it. Mexicans see models of Trump's impenetrable wall and they're not impressed. Good is my answer. Okay, 800-222-5222 if you'd like to be on the program. sam@samnation.com is the email. There is now even some drone footage, apparently, of the different prototypes. They're building 8 different prototypes of a proposed wall. And to give you an idea, these prototypes are 30 by 30 feet tall and wide. 30 by 30 feet. And the current fencing, when they talk about, well, we do have a fence on the border, first of all, it doesn't cover the entire border. And then part of the fence is that there's a short one that's 10 feet high. And then there's a tall one that's 18 feet high. And this is quite a bit taller. It's almost twice as tall, at 30 feet tall. And you see these walls, and I like them. These are nice walls. And this is exactly what Bush, in this speech that he was giving, and I was mentioning President George W. Bush's remarks in the last segment that he gave earlier today. And one of the things that he spoke out against was that nationalism has been distorted into nativism, and that we've forgotten the contributions that immigration has always made, always brought to America. And of course, he's obliquely talking about Trump, but it's also part of this thinking, and it pervades the Democratic Party, it pervades the Republican Party, that if you come out and are anti-illegal immigrant, you're anti-immigrant. And but this is one of the things in our political discourse that truly upsets me. And if you know me, you know my story. My parents came to this country legally. It was a tremendous, tremendous challenge. They came from Europe. They came at a time when it was difficult to come here. It was an extremely arduous process and required sacrifice. And I'm not saying illegal immigrants don't sacrifice, but there are laws, and they followed the laws, and at a tremendous personal cost. And I'm offended when people come to me and say, "Well, yeah, you're illegal, you're anti-immigrant." I said, no, this is not the case. So I look at walls, and I look at the reason that the wall is needed is because we lack the political will to really do anything about illegal immigration here. That's what it is. We want it, truly both sides, establishment Republicans, establishment Democrats, both want an open, porous border. And it is cruel. Because what this in effect does is it's a wink wink and a nod nod to people coming and making a trek across a border that is dangerous and deadly. And then they come here and form a permanent underclass. And that underclass serves two masters on both sides. This is a criticism of both parties. The Republicans, they appease the corporate interests. They appease the Chamber of Commerce that needs cheap labor. They need cheap labor. And it's basic economics. The more money, the more of anything you have, the less it costs. The greater the supply, cost goes down. It's true with labor. And then it, of course, appeases the left. It appeases the establishment Democrats because they see a minority group that they can exploit, that they can turn into victims, that they can bring over and create a new victim class. Let us protect you. We're going to help you. We're going to give you citizenship. We're going to give you a pathway to citizenship. We're going to promise things to you. And those evil Republicans, and so they see voters. It's such a perverse system. It really boils my blood. Okay, Sam Rogowski, Sam Nation, live on Talk Radio 790 KBC.
Talk Radio. 790 KABC.
Sam Rogowski here for my friend, my attorney, sweet James Bergner, the only person to trust in the event of a accident, an injury, a slip and fall, a truck accident, motorcycle accident, dog bite, mouse bite, cat bite, whatever it is. You got to call James. He's the real deal. He's obtained, I think, north $400-500 million for his clients over the years. Done a phenomenal job. And he really is a type of lawyer that will listen to you, that will figure out what you need, what your needs are, and then go and take care of it and get you the justice that you need, that you deserve. So, no recovery, no fee. You don't owe him a dime until he gets you a settlement in your case. Consultations are always free. So give them a call. What are you waiting for? 800-881-2021, 1-800-881-2021, or visit James's website, and that is sweetjames.com. All right, Sam Rejofsky, Sam Nation, live on Talk Radio 790 KBC. And, aha, interesting bit of news. Speaking of illegal immigration, we have a word out right now that there is a gentleman by the name of Jesus Fabian Gonzalez. And Jesus Fabian Gonzalez, who is this guy? Well, he, let's see, he is a guy who has been arrested multiple times and returned to Mexico multiple times, an illegal immigrant. You know where? You know where they keep finding him? They keep finding him in Sonoma County. Now, Sonoma County is a what ICE calls a non-cooperative jurisdiction, which is also another word for sanctuary city, right? You're familiar with that term. You know, Los Angeles is a sanctuary city, and we're trying to make California a sanctuary state. This is crazy stuff. So this guy gets deported. I want to see how many times here. Oh, twice. Okay, got twice returned to Mexico, comes back again, and is the prime suspect now in the Sonoma fire, of setting the Sonoma fire. Now, I know. This is the dangerous thing. You are going to tell me that American citizens set fires too. And you're right. You know what? American citizens set fires, and they murder people, and they drink and drive, and they commit fraud, and they commit a lot of bad things. But this is their country. This is their country by virtue of their citizenship. And all I'm saying is, to any person that lost their home, their business, a loved one in this fire, is it any solace to tell them, well, you know what? Maybe, just maybe, if we had actually deported this guy, and if we were not a sanctuary city and were reporting detainers to ICE, then ICE could have picked him up and got rid of him. But that didn't happen. And it's the funniest thing. They didn't even let ICE know now that he was detained for the fire. So God, this is crazy stuff. It's crazy, crazy stuff. So there's no solace. It's just a fascinating thing to me that I don't know if this is going to be a news story up in San Francisco. That's just it. Nobody's going to examine this as an illegal immigration story and as a sanctuary city story. They're going to analyze this as a guy who committed arson. But in all of these cases, when you have a bad actor, and it's so easy to get into this country, why is it easy to get into this country? Because we have a porous southern border. This guy did not get into the country, I promise you, by flying into LAX or flying into SFO. He got across the border. And he didn't do it through the front door, through a checkpoint. Okay? I mean, almost virtually guaranteed he didn't. So we look at these prototypes of the wall. The Washington Compost reporting that the Mexicans are not impressed by Trump's impenetrable wall. And one of the reasons they're not impressed by it is because they're already seeing how they're going to scale it. So I saw that statement in the article and I said, well, I got to see evidence. I'm going to see what kind of details they have about it. But they basically said that they're walking around the wall. I'm like, yeah, these are prototypes. They've set these prototypes up. There are gaps in between. If you look at them, they have a 30 by 30 section of a wall. Then there's a giant gap. And then another one. And they as the reporter is out there from the Washington Post looking at the wall, he sees Mexicans or whomever running across the border. He's like, see, they're not threatened by this thing. Is this real? It's fantastic. But I do think it makes a big difference. I do think a 30-foot wall makes a big difference from a 10-foot wall. And any obstacle is important. So we'll follow this. We'll follow this closely. And see how this goes. And it should. This is one. Remember, politically, what does this mean politically? Why is this important politically? The image. The Washington Post thinks they're criticizing Trump in this article, but by printing images of an actual wall being constructed. Does incredible things, I'm telling you, is doing incredible things to check that box for a lot of voters that put Trump into office on that promise. And to them, they're seeing this. They're not reading what the Washington Post has to say. They don't care about that. But they see a wall being built. They see prototypes going up, and that's good. So politically, for Trump, this is very important. And as much as they try to criticize him, actually, it might end up actually helping him. Sam Brzozowski, Sam Nation, live on Talk Radio 790 KBC.
Talk Radio. 790 KABC.
Sam Brzozowski, Sam Nation, live on Talk Radio 790 KABC. The Wall Street Journal earlier today reported that the FBI is now joining the probe into the death of U.S. soldiers in the Niger. They are apparently investigating because lawmakers in Congress are criticizing the White House and the Pentagon over a lack of information. Now, I just want to remind you, this is consistent with what Trump said all along would be his modus operandi. He was not going to be fighting wars in the media. He would not be describing troop movements. He would not be describing strategy. He would not be publicly commenting on military maneuvers. So just, you know, just be aware that that's what it is. There's no cover up. This is what Madison and Kelly and Trump, they're all on the same page here. You don't talk about this stuff publicly. You don't get into it. And honestly, if there's a protocol for Congress getting briefed, this is so political. This is grandstanding. Because if Congress actually cared and said, "Wait, now there's a problem here. Let's see if we can get some oversight," they can do that in a closed door session. But there's no political points to be scored in a closed door session. So now they're making a big public stink. By the way, the way I understand it is that this action in the Niger consisted of taking out some African faction of ISIS. There's something there. We'll maybe as we get more time, we're up against the end of the show here, but we'll give you some more details on it maybe tomorrow night. So. Tomorrow night, yes, we will be back here in the studio, 7 p.m. With you and ready to tackle the news. And we'll see. I'm curious. I really am curious what I said earlier about Kelly and his just really impassioned defense of the phone call that of Trump and the way that he placed that call and handled the condolence call to the serviceman's widow. I can see Kelly rapidly going from darling to public enemy number one with the liberal press. So we will see what transpires tomorrow during the day. And I don't know. Hopefully not. But I have very little faith here in the mainstream media. All right, my friends, it's been a great 2 hours. Have a great Thursday evening, and I look forward to seeing all of you and talking to you tomorrow night. Have a good one.